The Attorney General is doing that review. I will fully cooperate with it, and then you will have the facts.
I think it's because of a broad pattern of abuse of power, of which the sexual harassment allegations are but one part.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, the latest from a state capitol in turmoil in Albany, my conversation with Assemblyman Phil Steck, a Colony Democrat, who has already called for New York Governor Andrew Cuomo to resign. Cuomo is under investigation over sexual harassment allegations from at least three women. I spoke with Phil Steck around midday Wednesday. Assemblyman, you were early out calling for Governor Andrew Cuomo to resign over the scandal, over the sexual harassment allegations. How come?
Well, I wouldn't phrase it exactly that way. I know that the sexual harassment allegations are very sensationalized, but I think it's because of a broad pattern of abuse of power, of which the sexual harassment allegations are but one part. The governor has attacked members of the legislature personally. He's attacked members of the media personally. And his behavior towards staff, even if it's not considered sexual harassment, has been really not acceptable. It's a consistent pattern of abusing his power as governor. And then on top of that, you have the sexual harassment. I would give a couple examples. You can't really trust information you get from the governor's office. Witness the nursing home scandal. Also, for example, nine people resigned, nine leading officials at the Department of Health resigned because they alleged there was a political interference from the governor. And, you know, the governor then says that he doesn't believe experts. Well, when he's trying to tell people to trust the science doesn't mean Andrew Cuomo is all-knowing and all-seeing. So I think this is all part of a very significant and recurring abuse of power by the governor.
So for you, the allegations are troubling, but your call for him to resign is cumulative.
Right. You know, one of the things about sexual harassment is that he does have the opportunity to defend himself. That's what the investigation is for. Also, since I've practiced law in this area of civil rights for 35 years, I know some cases, you know, they can be unsubstantiated even if they're true. So, but I think that there's a broader pattern of abuse of power, and I don't like government by scandal. I think we have to look at this broad experience that people are having with the governor that is very consistent and is not conducive to effective policymaking in the state. If you can't take a position without fear of being threatened by the governor, accurate information to come from the various agencies, and with this governor's office, I've lost confidence that that's the case.
Have you gotten those phone calls, the yelling phone calls that have gotten so much press lately? Assemblyman Ron Kim talked about this as well. Have you been on the receiving end of those?
I never have, and I think there may be a number of reasons for that. I like to say that as an elected official, I have one foot in the Democratic establishment and one foot out. And I never actually endorsed the governor for election. He never endorsed me. And I try to keep a independent position while at the same time supporting the principles of the Democratic Party. I think it's very bad for the Democratic Party for this governor to continue in office. You know, we can't say that, well, Donald Trump is worse, which is true, very much so. But that's setting the bar pretty low. I think we have a right after 10 years to expect better performance from the governor.
Let me go back to something you said earlier about the investigation. His defenders, Jay Jacobs, the chair of the State Democratic Committee, they've said, Well, these are unproven allegations. He deserves the chance to have the investigation and the report come out. We know that under Tish James, the attorney general, there will be a final public report. What's wrong with waiting?
So again, this is a repeat pattern of abuse of power. And that's what's wrong with waiting. This is not just about sexual harassment.
The governor might also say this, you know, he's been reelected twice by the voters. They kind of know what they're getting with him. And most of this stuff is in the public record, but he's retained high popularity.
Well, I think one of the things about being governor in today's world where access to the media is very limited, he has the bully pulpit and he controls the message. So when it came to COVID, for example, he was able through his press conferences to portray himself in a manner that I felt was excessive concerning him being the strong leader that was saving us from COVID. I never thought that was accurate, but it's a good example of this ability of the governor to get in front of the media at his whim, really, and propagandize for his political position. As a member of the assembly, we are not able to do that. So there's a remarkably little debate that goes on about what the governor does. And I think what's going on with Ron Kim, the nursing homes, the interference with the health department has really put the focus on the governor in a way that had not been the case before.
So I know this is a fast-moving story. We are speaking Wednesday around midday. Do you think the governor will be driven from office here in the coming hours or days?
I have no idea about that. You know, he's got Jay Jacobs, who's chair of the Democratic Party, standing up for him. I don't agree with Chairman Jacobs. I feel the behavior of the governor is very bad for the Democratic Party. One of the things that if you criticize the governor, you'll get feedback from some Democrats saying that, well, you know, we have to stand against people like Elise Stefanik. Again, Elise Stefanik condoned overthrow the government of the United States, and Andrew Cuomo did not do that. However, as Democrats, I think we've got to do better than a governor who feels he can threaten members of the legislature, that he can interfere in every aspect of the state government in a personal way, and who it is very clear treats his staff very poorly. So I think that I don't agree that that's good for the Democratic Party. I don't, you know, these authoritarian tendencies that we're seeing in modern American politics, I do not think are helpful. I think we got to enhance our commitment to democracy, not defend abuse of power.
Where does that leave things as we speak in terms of the, you know, budget negotiations, talk about whether to institute a new wealth tax, the stock transfer act tax that you favor reinstating, even legalizing marijuana? A lot of these issues normally would be, you know, getting down to crunch time now in early March. But, you know, we haven't even seen the governor in public in a week.
Well, I think the budget process is going on. The speaker is making sure of that. The bill that's going to come out to terminate the ability of the governor to issue new executive orders relating to COVID shows the speaker's commitment to the budget process. From my standpoint, I still find this issue of lack of information from the governor very troubling. So let's take, for example, something you pointed out, the stock transfer tax. So we have this onslaught from Wall Street. Oh, we can't have this here. Well, in Hong Kong, their stock transfer tax is 13 cents, and our proposal is 5 cents, and Goldman Sachs in Asia has come out and says it's insignificant. No one makes investment decisions based on, you know, 13 cents on a $100 purchase. So instead of having a governor who recognizes those facts, we have a governor who generally puts out disinformation concerning things like the stock transfer tax. So we have a situation where the state tax and finance department was saying the tax would only raise $5 billion, when in fact, under oath, the commissioner admitted that the tax, that the potential receipts were not being reported by big Wall Street firms. So that takes you back to 2017, when volume was lower on Wall Street, and yet the tax reported receipts were $14 billion. So again, when you're doing a budget, if you have manipulation of numbers to diminish other people's arguments, that is very, that is not something that I think is very helpful to the people of the state of New York.
Well, do you feel that Governor Cuomo and his policies have been out of step with where the legislature is now, given the makeup of Democratic control of both houses?
Well, you know, this is very complicated. You know, in the Democratic Party, it is an umbrella organization. I would say that 20% of Democrats are pretty conservative, particularly on economic issues. 30% of Democrats are probably to the left, and the other 50% probably tend to go along with whatever the party ultimately decides. And I think the governor is out of step with the mass of Democrats on economic issues. I don't think he is on social issues, but on economic issues, he's profoundly conservative. He's living in the Ronald Reagan era, and I think we got to move forward from that. You know, upstate New York, where I live, needs public investment. We don't need tax-free zones. They don't succeed. They never worked. They didn't work under George Pataki. They didn't work under Andrew Cuomo. So what the stock transfer tax is designed to do is basically fund a new deal for upstate New York, where we're going to put public money into building up the infrastructure of our communities. Just to give you an example, one of my colleagues, Pat Burke, who's from Buffalo, has said that it takes more time now to travel by train from Buffalo to Albany than it did 50 years ago. I know this is true. So that's an example of our infrastructure is in decay. We need to address it. And the governor really hasn't been doing that.
Just a couple of more things. Are you satisfied with the deal that was announced on Tuesday to roll back the governor's emergency powers as they relate to COVID in the outline that was released?
Well, it's a complicated question. Certainly, banning the governor from any additional executive orders is a major step forward. There are other things in the bill that I don't particularly care for. I tend to think that in a democracy, we shouldn't deputize members of the legislature, such as chairs of committee, with extraordinary powers. Either the way this is going to work is if he wants to amend or modify a one of his existing executive orders, he goes to the committee chair with responsibility for that area. I don't really think that would not be my particular solution. On the other hand, there is some sense, I think, in the legislature that we gave him these powers, which, by the way, I voted against, but these powers were given to him. And in as you withdraw from that scenario, there needs to be a process to do that. So while it would not be the bill that I would have written, but nonetheless, it does move us forward towards getting back to normal democratic government in this state.
Is there anything from this latest sexual harassment scandal, there's no other way to put it really, that you think the legislature should take a look at? Are there new bills that should be considered? Anything along those lines to root out what's been a pervasive problem in the Capitol as far as our understanding is?
I think I had put in a comprehensive bill on discrimination based on the federal model several years ago. It is my practice area. I think it would be a big improvement, but that was not the bill that the assembly leadership chose to put forward. We did have major reforms to the to how these type of allegations are handled. For example, in the federal court, believe it or not, you can look and you can see case law which will say that unless the sexual harassment is severe and pervasive, it's not actionable. And there have been cases of where what I consider extremely severe conduct have not been allowed to proceed to be challenged in lawsuits. So I think we've made a lot of progress in that area. I don't think the answer here is more legislation. I think the answer here is that this needs to be put, you know, sexual harassment is an act of power over someone else. And I think it's in the context of an overall consistent pattern of abuse of power by this governor. That's how I see it. I don't think it needs new legislation. I would say, by the way, that this doesn't seem related, but it is the critical factor. In 1927, our Constitution was amended to give the governor power over the budget. That is not the normal way democratic systems function. Normally, the budget is in the control of the electeds who are closest to the people, not those farthest from the people. And this is very important because it facilitates abuse of power by the governor because he uses his control over the budget to bludgeon people who disagree with him. I think that's a major reform that's needed. I think we should go back to the way budgeting was done before 1927. You know, in those days, it was before the big, you know, administrative state that we have now in New York and we have at the federal level had developed. So now you have a situation where the governor controls appointments to the Court of Appeals of the state of New York. So he's going to appoint people that look upon him favorably. He controls the budget and he controls all the administrative agencies. Too much power, and it leads to abuse, particularly in the case of this governor.
New York State Assemblyman Phil Steck, a Democrat from the 110th District. Thank you for sharing your views and thanks for taking all this time for us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.